Bav Metzia Perek Zayin Mishnah Ches. So the first bit of the Mishnah is picking up on the last topic, which is talking about the Shomer being allowed to eat when he's working with the food. So here we have Shomer Peros, people who are guarding fruit, and this fruit is he's guarding it, you know, while it's detached from the ground, but he's not working with it. He's just making sure that, you know, while it's in the middle of processing, so it hasn't gotten, it's talush, detached, but it hasn't hit Gemar Malacha. I don't know, they're waiting for the new boxes to arrive so they can box up their dates. So in the meantime, he's standing around making sure that no one gets to him. So Shomer Peros, those guys who are guarding the fruit that are, yes, detached, but not yet finished working their Malacha, Ochen Mehilchos Medina, they are allowed to eat from the dates that are waiting to be packaged up, but because of Medina, because of the law of the land, let's call it, of a law of Min HaTorah. The Torah itself, when it allowed people to eat food with which they are working, it didn't include this, because these people aren't working with the food. They're just standing around making sure that no one comes to take the food. So the Torah wouldn't allow them to eat, but the Hilchos Medina, which usually means like the law of the land, like that's the normal way of things, allows them to eat. The Bar Tanura seems to learn just like that. That it's, his comment is, Shekvar Nahagu Kein. Like that's the way they've always been doing things. So that would then imply that in a place where it is in the Minug, like if you go to Timbuktu and there the Shomer Peros don't eat, they wouldn't be allowed to. Although, so that's how the Mishnah seems to read, and that's how the Bar Tanura seems to learn. Others, however, learn that that's not the case. The Tosarid and the Meiri, they want to say that when it says Medina, means that the rabbis made a takanas chazal, that people could help themselves in such a situation. So then that wouldn't, of course, no longer would matter what the minhag of Medina is. It means that Medina, the rabbis, established a rule that people can help themselves if they're guarding food, even if they're not working with it.
Are rabbis allowed to rule contravening the Torah? There's a
derisive
that you shouldn't
be eating. No, first of all, both premises of your question are wrong. There are two premises. Yeah, number one, it's not even, they're not even doing that. In other words, the Torah didn't say it's usher to eat the food. The Torah just didn't. It's food. The Torah didn't, the owner of the fruit could do whatever he wants vis-a-vis his guardian. The Torah didn't say you dare not eat your. I mean, there's a general rule about stealing, but the point is, it's the thrust of the Mishnah is that although the Torah elsewhere said the workers are allowed to help themselves, that doesn't apply here because they're not working with the food. Nevertheless, the rabbi said in this case they are allowed to eat, so that wouldn't be going against the Torah.
Oh, so it didn't make it usher, it never really said you can.
I don't understand your question. Sorry.
It never forbid it.
Right. It's just. I mean, I guess the default position is if it's not yours, you can't eat it. Obviously, right? But the rabbis went and said, "Yeah, but we want people to be able to function in normal society." So then we're making it to kind of saying the rules of the game when you enter the contract is that you are indeed allowed to eat. You are indeed allowed to eat, but it's not. In other words, let's say for example, we saw something very similar yesterday, that midoraisi, you only can eat while you're working with the grapes, not when you're walking from grapevine A to grapevine B. But the rabbis went and said, no, help yourself there too. There they had a better reason. There the reason was, it's in everyone's interest, because you're saving everyone money. So that would be, but here, for whatever reason they saw fit for a normal function society, they made a takana. So that wouldn't be going against the Torah proper. Now, the truth is the Torah, the rabbis can and do from time to time go against what the Torah says, make tikkunas. Typically, whenever that happens, it's in the department of what's called Sheva Al Tasa. The rabbis say, even though the Torah says do it, we say don't do it. It's like a famous example would be, you know, blowing a Sorry?
Should marry more
than one woman? That's not a good example of that. Why? Because the rabbis do all sorts of things to add additional restrictions. Right? That's not, the Torah never said marry two women, and the rabbis are saying, no, don't. It's the Torah saying you could, and the rabbi saying you shouldn't. That's different. This I'm saying is the Torah says, blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and the rabbi said, but if it's Shabbos, don't. So you don't, there's a mitzvah to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, but the rabbis said, no, don't do it. So that's an example where the rabbis put their foot down and say no, even though the Torah said yes. They have to have their cheshbon. But the point is, there are some weird cases where everyone starts trying to figure out how it's possible the rabbis seem to be, instead of saying, shev v'altasa means just sit on your hands and don't do anything. It seems sometimes the rabbis seem to be pushing people, very occasionally, it seems that there's rabbinic rules that say do something that the Torah says not to do. But that's always fraught with lots of pitiful.
Can you give one off the top of
Can I give one off the top of my head? No, I can't. But it does happen sometimes. It does get discussed. Like, how could... I can't now. Sorry. I just can't. But the point is that the rabbis do sometimes say, don't do what the Torah says to do. There's also... That's not a hora sha. That's something else. If you know what I mean by that. The rabbis can say permanently, change the rules. Hora sha is like a temporary abrogation. That's something else. You know, like... They made a suit and ate on Yom Kippur and stuff like that. That's Solomon Melech. I'm not sure what the din is there. I'm not sure which of the two that is. I'm not thinking about. I'm not sure if he was a Navi that was making Baharasha. But sometimes the Navi can say things that do what the Torah didn't say to do temporarily. Okay. In any case, so that's that. Now, the Mishnah is really two parts to it. The second part, not only is it like a new Kilo, new Mishnah, it's like back to an old parak. I don't know why all of a sudden the Mishnah is divided like this. But anyways, mid-thought here, there's a period, should be a new paragraph, where we're going to revert back to what we said in the third parak, talking about the Shomrim. We're going right back, and now even though there, we never really fleshed out the four categories of guardianship and how they worked. Here we are, all of a sudden, pitom, in the middle of nowhere, here we are. Since we're talking about workers guarding fruit, like, we were reverting back to that topic. So it says, Arba Shomrim Hen, there are four categories of guardians, people who are, you know, which are the Shomer Chinam, the unpaid guardian, he's doing you the favor, the watchman is doing the owner of the favor, Vashoel, the borrower, where the person watching it is the favor, all the favors being done for him, and it was the owner is doing the favor for the watchman, I'm lending you my thing, at no charge. Then a middle case, a Nosa Sachar, who's a paid watchman. The Nosa Sachar of the Mishnah is the exact same thing as the Shomer Sachar. It's the same thing. He's being paid, Sachar is payment. He's taking money for guarding. And the Socher, which we said, La Halacha, the Socher, the renter, has the same din as the Shomer Sachar, the paid guardian. So there's four categories of borrowers, where I'm paying you, you're paying me. We are, I'm not paying you and you're not paying me. That's how it comes out, right? So, those are the four possibilities. Now, there really are only three levels of responsibility amongst the four of them, though, because Chazal looked at like things that can go wrong in three categories. They have the Pshia, which is negligence. You did something that was irresponsible, and of course something bad happened. So, that's on the one extreme. You have Ones, which is something happened beyond your control. Like, what if a tsunami came? So, all the protection and anticipation in the world wouldn't have solved that problem. And then something in the middle, which is Gneiva Neveda, which is not quite either one. Gneiva Neveda is like a funny area. Literally means theft and loss, but it means where on the one hand you weren't a poshea, you didn't do something that was obviously ridiculous, but on the other hand, you could have avoided it if you'd have tried. So like, I've been translating it recently as avoidable loss, just for that reason. But the point is, it's you weren't overtly negligent. You didn't put a sign, you know, I have lots of money, come and take it, outside your house, right? But on the other hand, given that you had lots of money, and there was a Brinks truck out of your house yesterday, you probably should have considered armed guards would have been a good idea. And since all you used, you know, was closing the door with a little token, the key, that is going to keep people out to want to come in to find out what was in the Brinks truck. That would be considered Gneva or Veda, and that's a middle case. So, just to remind you, the Shomer Chinam, the unpaid guardian, since he's doing you the favor, he's not responsible for anything. Unless he's a poshe, unless he's negligent. And therefore he can always swear. He can always take a shvu and say, listen, whatever happened, it wasn't my fault, I didn't do it on purpose. He'll be exempt. He can take a shvu and everything. Then the shoel, the borrower, since I'm borrowing your thing and you're doing me the favor, I'm responsible for everything. Which means even if, not only pshia and even ganev and aveda, but even onus. If a tsunami comes and washes away your lawnmower, my lawnmower that I lent to you, so then I still want my lawnmower back, you have to replace it. There isn't, well, Yeah, there's a PS, if you remember, I'll discuss it afterwards. And then there's the middle case, the Shomer Sachar and the Socher, who they have a negotiated transaction, that's the way I've been explaining it. They come to terms that you're getting, it's a quid pro quo, you're getting some benefit and I'm getting some benefit. Because either I'm letting you use my object and you're paying me money, or you're watching my object and you're, or I'm paying you money and you're taking responsibility for my object. So, in those cases, it's in the middle. The Shomer Sachar and the Socher is obligated for negligence, of course, and not obligated for onsen against their control, circumstances they couldn't help. But if it's Ganeiv and Aveda, they are, yes, responsible. So that's why I'm paying you, to take on an extra level of responsibility to make sure that the avoidable losses are avoided. So that's the middle case. Now there is a... Okay, there's the one that you should be able to remember and it's in your pocket forever. There's a small PS, which is just a PS, which is even the Shoel, who we said is not responsible for everything, when I borrow your item, your lawnmower, your donkey, whatever it is, if it breaks or dies in the use in which I said I was going to use it, I was mowing the lawn and the blade broke, I was the donkey slapping and the donkey, you know, keeled over. So then I'm potter. Because it's called Mesa Machas Malacha. It died... Not Mason Machs Malacha died doing the work that because of the work that we agreed you were letting me to do. That's you. We agreed I could do it.
You didn't borrow?
Yeah, because you said I'm borrowing it to mow my lawn.
So if I borrow cement mixture from someone, this actually happened to me easier. I borrow cement mixture from somebody, right? And they Toch Kadei, the thing's like dying, and it sounds like a world's fastest man laying up a hill.
And then it seized up.
And like, it wouldn't start without me giving it like a push. At that, by the end, like I was doing it normal use,
I'm a putter. Right. Assuming that your push didn't break it. I'm just speaking it out. If you'd say, oh, since it wouldn't work by itself, I jerry'd it to work. That might be crossing a line. I'm just speaking out. So, but in normal, correct. The principle that you have is exactly right. It died. It was going to die sooner or later. You let me borrow it, then it died. It lived its full life. That's how things die eventually.
Borrower and the renter is that the renter actually pays money to the borrower, so to speak, right?
Right.
Yeah. And
the renter is paying.
So what is the fact that I give you money to rent this thing rather than just borrow it? Right? What is that? Is that maybe less responsible to you? Do I?
Yeah, because
or is it the same rules that if these things happen, I'm still responsible?
If someone stole it from you, you would be putter as opposed to borrowing it.
If...
Right. Isn't that what you said?
Close, but not exactly what I said. Yeah,
borrower,
one second.
So, high for onus.
The borrower's high for onus, but just want to speak up. Stealing, Geneva, is considered not an onus. It's considered avoidable. I should speak out. A lot now becomes details. Like armed robbery is an onus. If someone comes and puts a gun to your head, that's an onus. That's listem, that's called, the robbers. Geneva's in the nighttime, they broke in your house because you didn't lock it up properly. There's a difference. Okay, so in other words, if someone manages to find their way into Fort Knox, I think they would still consider an onus because Fort Knox was locked down. What did they found out? It was beyond expectation. The normal case of Geneva is thieves can get in if they want to. That's the point. So if you don't lock them out and you make it easy for them to come in, you'll be chayav. If you did everything that was reasonably expected, you'd be considered an onus. That, I guess, will be a din Torah, like at what point you draw the line. But just hear the principle. The principle is, if they put a gun to your head, that's considered an onus. What do you want? Like that you could all that anticipation in the world doesn't help. They put a gun at your head. Whereas if they broke into your house at night, the basic assumption is that was avoidable. You could have just put a better lock or got a guard dog. You chose not to. So you don't, So you would, so that meaning that if it's Geneva, you didn't lock it up well enough, then you would be responsible as a Shomer Sachar, as a paid watchman, or as a Socher, as a renter. They're in the same boat.
Well, when you secure something and it gets broken into, don't you just, if you can prove this is the, even though, yes, it could have been a better lock or more, but the normal regular people, the average person only puts on this type of lock or secures the premises this way. So if you can show that in the area people only secure it this way, wouldn't you be...
That would be Geneva. That would still be Geneva. It would have to be Shmira Ma'ula, like that. In other words, was, you know, you'd still be on the hook if you did it in a normal way. But no, one second. If you borrowed it and you locked your house in a normal way, you'd still be responsible. Geneva. You'd have to do, Shmir Ma'ula would have to be like, the not just, they would say, yes, that's a reasonable way to lock. If you wouldn't put on that reasonable level of locking, then they would, that would be considered a pshia. That's your door open, essentially. You then lock up with normal. Normal, less than normal is considered pshia. But you'd have to go beyond normal to be considered to be an onus. It has to be like that a you know, security expert would say, no one's getting that thing. Okay, but they did, so they managed, they were the human tsunami. They managed to figure out, you know, no one's anticipating they're gonna tunnel under your house, you know, six, you know, and then come on up the other side. That's not, that no one in their right mind would protect against tunneling under the house. This, you know, so therefore that would be, I would believe that would be considered an onus, you know? But breaking down the door, that's just Geneva. What do you expect? That's what thieves get in, they break open the door. But yeah, so, again, it'll be for a basis to decide at what point it became an onus. But the unforeseeable is the onus, so unavoidable. You know, if someone decides to you can use nuclear weapons to get inside your house, then nothing you can do with standards, it's not going to help. So, did I answer your question about, or not yet?
No, So, the case of the renter and the borrower, right, one pays, one doesn't pay. You, as the person who is the owner of the item, let's say it's the old lawnmower. So if I borrow it and it dies in normal use, or if I rent it and it dies in normal use, do you still have to provide me with?
Oh, another one.
You have to provide me with?
Oh, that's a separate question. I'll take them two separate parts here. There are two issues. Just speaking out. So if this one might be redundant, but just speaking out clear. If I rent you my lawnmower, so. If I give you my lawnmower to borrow, so really I'm doing you the favor, I'm getting nothing in return. So what I expect in return is my lawnmower back. So therefore, nothing, even an onus doesn't help you. If we're making a deal, I'm giving my lawnmower and you're paying me something, so it is unreasonable, the Torah is saying, it's unreasonable to then put the burden of onsen. You have to be a regular guardian. And the standard of someone who's being paid to watch something, but not more than that. So therefore, if you say, the tsunami came and washed away, that would be legitimate, because what do you want? I paid you for using your thing, and you can't expect me to hold me to unreasonable standards beyond that. End of part one. Part two is, there's a separate rule we saw before, that if I'm going to you and I'm paying you for a month's lawnmower service, so then if the agreement was you'll provide me with a lawnmower, then you have to provide me with another one if it died, because it wasn't a functional lawnmower. The lawnmower died halfway through. If you agreed, yes, you can borrow this lawnmower, then I said, what do you want from me? The lawnmower is finished. So that's that.
So renting is not this particular
lawnmower,
it's a
lawnmower. But the two kinds of rentals. It can be renting this particular one or renting anyone. Okay. So that's all the background, that's all the Mishnah is saying. So the Mishnah says inside, Arba Shomer Hen, therefore Shomerim again, the Shomer Chinam, the unpaid one, the Shoel, he's getting all the benefit, Nosa Sachar, he's being paid to watch it, and the Socher, he's paying to borrow it. So Shomer Chinam Nishba Lakol. The Shomer Chinam, he's doing you the favor as watching a thing, so he can swear on anything, meaning even Ganev and Aveda, as long as it wasn't Ona, Shia, he's Pater, therefore he takes a Shavua and he's off the hook. That Shavua, just remember, the Shavua is a Shom, actually has three prongs to it. Prong number one is that he wasn't a Poshea, but he has to swear he wasn't doing negligence. Number two, he has to swear that he wasn't Shaleach Boyad, he didn't fiddle with it, you gave him your thing to watch. If he used it in the interim, then he's now lost his privileges as a Shomer Chinam. And third of all, he has to take a shvu that is in a bershu, so it's not in his house. Because remember, he could say something happened, but he's like, it's true, he was a poshea, and it's true he was a shleich boyah, but when he said it was stolen, really wasn't stolen, it's in his basement. So, he has to swear he doesn't have it. No shvu today, right. Shvus have gone the way of Yibum. Right. Now, well, okay, it's not necessarily crazy if people don't take shvuah seriously. That'd be even worse, right? So now it's left up to the judges to ascertain what they think is reasonable. You would think it's crazy if they could swear and get out of it. So, fine. Shomer chinam, he's nishba lakol, the unpaid watch, and he swears on whatever he want, on everything. V'hashoel mishalem esakol. The borrower, he pays on everything. Even onus isn't an excuse, so he has to pay no matter what happens. Now, this is the PS I was talking about before. There is an exception, which is the Mesa Machas Malacha, that he can get out of that. V'nosa sachar v'asocher, the people who are paying, either to watch for their object to be watched or to borrow the object. Nishban alashvura valashvuya valamesa. They could swear on own sin, things that are beyond their control. And three examples given are shvura, it broke. This is not mesa machas malacha. This is called mesa kadarka. Like things die eventually. That's something else. So in other words, it wasn't that I was using it in the way you told me to, and then it had a heart attack, and what do you want from me? Like, at some point, animals just die. And that's considered an onus. How can I stop it? The animal had his number was up. So that's shfura, it broke. So that's considered an onus.
If you borrow somebody's, some item, you're saying if it breaks, you're responsible. If you're using it the right way, a borrower, if you're using it the right way, you're responsible to give back, replace it. But if there's a life, you know, in other words, they say this particular part that they use, like a refrigerator, whatever, it lasts 5 years. Now there's already a 7-year-old refrigerator. You borrow the refrigerator, it's going to die. You're still responsible to give back.
So that's considered an onus. So that means you'd be putter unless you're a shoal. If you're a shoal, you're chayav. Now, just to speak out to you, you'll be, in other words, it's hard for me to exactly think about the refrigerator example, just because I'm not exactly sure, but like, because it's hard to see how do you use a refrigerator versus not use a refrigerator, but so that's not a good example for my purposes. I understand your point. I want to illustrate the lawnmower. If I'm using a lawnmower in the middle of the lawn, it seizes up, but the blade breaks, whatever it is, that's misa machas malacha. That's that thing dies. As opposed to, I be using it all week. I go to my garage, you know, this morning to go take it out, and I see, like, I try to start it, it won't start anymore. It worked yesterday, it stopped working today. That's not misa machas malacha. That's misa kadarka. That's it, it just died. Like, sooner or later, it's going to stop working. It happens. Right, whatever. So, like, it didn't seize up while working, it seized up on its own separate. So, it's like the cow. The cow had a heart attack up the hill, that's a mesa machas malacha. The cow, I come next morning, the cow's dead on the floor, that's mesa kadarko. The second case is an onus. So, if I barge your cow and I come back in the morning and it's a heart attack dead, I have to replace the cow. If I barred it. Now, just I'll speak out to you that if the cow died because it was, you know, 95-year-old cow, whatever the equivalent is in cow years, or, you know, or the refrigerator died because it was 7 years old and only lasts for 5 years, I have to replace it, but I have to replace a 95-year-old cow. I have to give you a brand new span. No, I understand that. You can't hold me. Oh, the value of it. You follow what I'm saying? In other words, don't say a brand new cow costs $1,000 and so I want $1,000. No, but your cow had, you know, 0 to 1 years left in it. So exactly. So I'm giving you whatever the fair price is for cows that seem healthy but are 95 years old. Right, which is not very much. And I'm speaking that out. Obviously, you know, I owe you what you lost, which is.
But what if it directly, I mean, it has no value.
Well, it only has no value because post facto you see that it died, but it's not how in really life, you know. Every so to speak, I don't know how to. I'm not going to get the Shkafic issue of, like, you know, predestination, and like. But the point is, like, so to speak, every day, every 95-year-old cows, you go to an actuary and it says that its actuarial life is, you know, a year and a half. Or whatever, 6 months or 6 minutes. So based on that, obviously some cows will kick the bucket in the next second, some cows will make it another 10 years. But the point is, it's got an actuarial life and it'll have a fair price on the market. Right? I mean, that's, if anything, in real life, refrigerators don't all die on their 7th birthday. Some of them make it up to 15 years and some die in 5 years. So they have a fair price. A 7-year-old refrigerator has a price. And it's a low price, but it has a price. That's what you're on the hook for. Invariably, exactly. So that's it. Now, yep. Okay, so that's shvura. That's mesa kadarka. It just stopped working. That's an onus. Shvuya is the listam. Those are the thieves come, the robbers come, and they kidnap your cow. They put a gun to your head and steal your cow. That's called an onus. What do you want? They stole your cow. Not a gnave in the nighttime. They came and took it from you, so you couldn't help it. And vala mesa. Mesa, oh, yeah, I said something, I'm not exactly right. Mesa here is Mesa Kadarka. Shavura means it broke Kadarka. It broke, you know, I don't know. I don't know where you draw the line in inanimate objects, but in living creatures, you have like a broken leg versus a, you know, or a sick animal versus like a dead animal. Okay, but it's all the same thing. That's all an onus beyond your control. So those are the things they could take a shvu on and say it was an onus on pater, because right, the nosa sachar and the sochar aren't chayav for those things. Umishalman es aveda ves aganeva, they do have to pay for things that were stolen, like a night, or lost, because those are what I call avoidable losses. Very good.